When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's Battlestar Galactica Queer Eye? That sounds like a great show.
So it's Jonathan and Tan France, and they go and they surprise Edward James Olmos as the captain from Battlestar Galactica. And, you know, in the decades since that show. Yeah, exactly. He's been wearing the uniform ever since. It's rotting off his body. So they're going to find him some new clothes.
He has to be hosting a party, too.
Yeah, and they're going to teach him, like, how to make, like, a single appetizer. And a fun cocktail. Jonathan is going to show him how to use Water Pick. And then at the end, what's his reveal? Yeah, exactly. He's going to invite the crew, Cylons included. We'll call it Battlestar Climactica. I don't know.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim and Dwight Creed. Call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host, plugging my new business where I personally deliver a walkway of flaming hot coals to your corporate events, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, captain of the blue team.
And with us as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
It was never my intention to ruin a life. But you know what? Sometimes...
Michael.
You just got to get your freak on.
Michael?
Yeah.
Michael?
To what do I owe this great honor, David Wallace?
Michael, I am calling.
Gromit? Jan? Is Jan there?
Jan's out of town right now.
Oh, you sigh like Jan.
That's the introduction to David Wallace. Mm-hmm. Is that phone call?
You're kidding? No.
Yeah.
Hit him with the double drop.
Yeah.
Wait, that's from Beach Games.
Yeah.
There's a moment in season two when Michael goes to New York.
Right, and he says they slept with Jan.
Introduction with David Wallace, a meet and greet. And it's like, bring your numbers.
Oh.
Michael shows that video where he's like, try walking a mile in Oscar's shoes or Phyllis's
great
pants.
Scott.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I'm sorry.
What a terrible start out of the blocks.
That's all right.
Hey, but you
That's
hit him right. with the double drop.
We're human.
I loved the double drop.
We're human. We're flawed. You know?
Well, the thing about the double drops is you got like so many jokes are like long and you want to there's a part one and a part two to so many jokes.
I love it when you just let it run.
I love the double drop. Yeah. It's great.
Anyways, this is a show where we talk about our favorite show.
I had prepared something to say.
It's not necessary.
May God guide you in your quest.
Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show. NBC's The Office. This week, we'll be discussing the episode Beach Games, which is the 22nd episode of the third season, and it was written by Jennifer Salata and Greg Daniels, and was directed by Harold Ramis.
Oh, wow.
It aired May 10th, 2007.
Yeah, just as a, it's a summertime episode. It's summer here.
Yeah.
And
it's a beautiful gray day.
that
in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. Nice chilly August morning.
Classic Oregon mild.
Yeah.
But anyway, Beach Games is kind of a signature episode of season three. It's one that I always think of when I think of season three first.
Yep.
A lot of really classic moments, a lot of sort of series-defining moments, and we say this a lot, but I definitely think that Beach Games sort of wraps up or encapsulates a lot of the dynamics that you see in The Office for the first few seasons, and then it changes a little bit after the job, which wraps up season three, moving into season four.
Feels like a lot's like coming to a head in this episode. We've kind of got everybody's storylines are sort of the main. I was trying to think what's the A storyline here, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's that Michael.
I think
it's
Kevin lying on the beach eating hot dogs.
Yeah.
Andy being stranded in the middle of the
storyline of Toby by himself at the office.
Oh yeah,
DE storyline.
I would say the A storyline in this episode is Michael trying to find
a replacement for the new manager. Right, he gets the call from David Wallace. Of course, he thinks right away that he'll be getting the job. So
he's being asked to interview for a job in corporate.
Scheduled this beach day. Which, you know, he surprises everyone with. He doesn't tell them where they're going.
You know, it's not clear, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's not clear if he schedules the beach day specifically to find this new manager, or if beach day was already happening.
Right.
And he's decided to fold this in at the last second.
He's decided to make it not fun.
Yeah.
The way the characters talk about beach day, it does seem like it's been in the works.
That's true.
For
yeah.
a while, it's like, it's beach day. You know, like, they know about it. Mm-hmm. They didn't, wasn't sprung on them.
But, right, right. Meredith. Yeah. Is wearing her bathing suit under her shirt. Oh.
Left it in her purse. The other main storyline's got to be Pam dealing with her own place.
Pam being literally and figuratively sidelined from the office. And I think, you know, as we get into the competition of it all, I think there are a lot of reasons why we're drawn to this one. Obviously, this threat of a new manager, right? Mm-hmm, the fact that everyone is together. It's kind of a bottle episode. They're out in the middle of nowhere. They're all in the same place. Toby is removed. So the HR court, like, you know, the idea that there'd be any sort of guideline or restriction on Michael is gone. And then they're all like, they're all in a more casual space. Like they're all wearing their, you know, beach clothes and they're like going to play games, they think. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes something else. So it's a whole different environment.
Yeah. I mean, of course, I think this is a big episode for Pam just as much as it is for Michael, Jim, Karen. It probably is. The climax of the episode is her confessing to everybody her true feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But
also just overall, I think aesthetically, like one of the more colorful episodes in the whole show, just like the setting. They're wearing colorful shirts. There's fire. There's all these. There's sumo suits. It's like this kind of playground that you never see.
Oh yeah,
the office in.
Well, Michael,
except for the hay place. And
Michael's planned this day where, I mean, he's trying to find the new replacement for him at Dunder Mifflin, and nothing that he's none of these competitions that he's organized have anything to do with managing an office.
No.
Right.
No.
Hot dog eating competition. He's leading a circus. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's what Michael believes you need to run the, like, it's his vision of leadership.
It brought me back to the question that I think we ask ourselves a lot. Is Michael a good manager? Right. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we're like, maybe he is. Like, I mean, I would say somehow he manages.
Yes. There you go. Yes.
But I would say that this episode is good evidence that he is not a good manager. He doesn't have any idea what his job actually entails, it seems like.
Well,
there are times when he sort of backs into like these successful moments or these successes, right? And there are a few instances in this episode where he really just throws these Hail Marys that like go nowhere. One I'm thinking of is when he asked Pam. Pam, as they're getting ready for beach day, Michael asks Pam to take notes on everything that everyone does, the indescribable qualities that make them themselves, and who would make a good manager, right? And it's an impossible task and a boring task.
Right.
And Pam says, you know, it's fitting that because I have the most boring job in the office, I'll have the most boring day on beach day. But anyway, Michael goes to Pam and to ask her about notes and to see what she wrote down after a certain event.
Everything he said, what people's reactions were.
And Pam says, you know, at one point you gave Jim a smiley face, Dwight a gold star, and Stanley a thumbs up.
Yeah.
And she's like, how does that translate? And he's like, check in the back, see if there's a conversion chart. And she's like, I really don't think. And he's like, just check. Like he's really throwing the ball downfield. Yeah. And then the other moment is when they get on the they get on the bus, and Michael starts to reveal that he's constructed these games for them. Mm-hmm. And Stanley kind of sighs. He's like, oh, like, I can't believe this. And he goes, if you don't like it, Stanley, you can go to the back of the bus. Or the front of the bus. Or drive the bus. He's just throwing things out there.
Excuse me.
See if he can redeem himself.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Some insane tasks are happening. He gives Pam 10 minutes to prepare 800 hot dogs, which she somehow pulls off because there they are.
There's a lot going on. He's hired a I made the joke at the beginning, but he's hired a company to come out and set up this
firewalk
out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you know,
the sumo suits,
which he bought instead of rent. He's so happy he bought instead of renting. Mm-hmm.
David Lynch started that firewalk company. It's called Firewalk with Me.
Oh, good. Good Twin Peaks joke.
Thanks. Thanks.
And then they, of course, do the egg on the spoon. I think, like,
the
egg on the
spoon. There's already a twist. It's an egg on a spoon.
is what Stanley says, yes. They do the egg on the spoon race, and I think that's a perfect encapsulation. So Michael goes into this with four candidates basically already identified.
It's got
so
Jim, Stanley, Dwight, Ryan.
Well, not Ryan.
Not Ryan?
Dwight and Andy.
Dwight and Andy. Yeah. That's right. That's
Dwight.
Right. Oh, I'm thinking of Ryan and Dwight during the egg thing. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So, so the teams are, we have Dwight as leader of Team Voldemort, Jim as leader of Team Gryffindor, mm-hmm. Stanley as leader of the blue team, and Andy as the leader of Team USA. USA.
Yeah.
Pam, patriotic. Please write down that Andy's patriotic. So, and those guys are already identified. And I think in the first sort of competition, we get to see them all be themselves. So we see Andy super enthusiastic, but like it goes wrong for him and he's still trying to.
Very frustrated.
Kelly is like, I know him by the big rock. I know it, Andy. And she takes off her blindfold and like the way the camera pans over to the big rock and it's so far away.
Some camera comedy.
Yeah.
Once again.
Mm-hmm. Dwight is too aggressive and he's too loud and his employee shuts down.
Right,
he's
right.
Like, I'm not doing this anymore. And come on, you bastard.
And Ryan's there like, no, this is bad leadership. Like Ryan can tell he's actually the best leader here.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up getting the job.
That's when he decides that he's going to go after it.
The irony secretly, of course, is like when they're thinking about hiring a new manager in season 7, he's like, I want someone who like will really lead this office and really take charge.
Yeah.
I need to be led. Lead me when I'm in the mood to be led. But don't like tell me what to do.
You know? Right.
Right. Later on, that's a different version of Ryan.
Yeah, right.
Jim, of course, is not taking it seriously, as Michael correctly identifies later. He's messing with Karen. To step in the water.
Right.
And then that's
Stanley's
all
Stanley's having a stroke.
Oh, yeah. Stanley's having a stroke.
Right.
Stanley's... I think I don't remember who's carrying the egg, but they drop it immediately. And Stanley's like, "Of course."
No, he goes. He says, "Thank you."
Doesn't know yet.
Phyllis drops the egg.
Stanley gets a unique shine in this episode.
He
in
sure
a way
does.
That doesn't come out like his sort of aggressive side and his sort of I think everyone else here is stupid and like I'm the only smart person in the office. You know, I would rather work for upturn mop with a bucket for a head than anyone else in this office.
Right, right.
That doesn't come out really again until the Deadeye Stutter episode, you know?
Yeah.
It's more like with Stanley, it's a little more apathy, you know, he doesn't care. And in this one, he's like, no, so fired up because he can get this.
I think it's one of two times, maybe in the whole show, that we see Stanley truly engaged.
Yeah.
This and then in the weight loss when he's, you know, lifting the paper under his desk and he's taking the stairs and he's like,
you know,
we were fighting the power and eating whatever we wanted.
Yeah. So I think there's maybe three times with Pretzel Day that you actually see Stanley really caring.
We've gotten to see so many people be the acting manager of Dunder Mifflin Scranton. And I really wish we could have seen Stanley.
Completely agree.
Get one episode in.
Yeah.
What his conference room meetings would be.
Yeah, he puts
what his management
projector slide up of
crossword puzzle, like a single crossword puzzle.
Right,
and he's like,
all right,
I'm stuck on 35 now.
Seven letter word for bag.
Yeah.
Satchel. Remember that?
Yeah.
Kevin is dressed as Phyllis.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Excited, though.
I wonder.
Release the power of the pyramid.
When he's on the.
When he really gets excited.
He's funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Florida Stanley, of course.
Yeah.
I wonder
whenever his daughter's involved and he's fired up about Ryan. Yeah.
I got to imagine that crossword puzzle book, he must have just actually been doing them while they were filming.
Hmm.
And I wonder that's probably a nice piece of memorabilia. I wonder if he kept them.
Yeah, like the props department had to keep getting them new ones.
Yeah.
Hmm. I gotta say too, just kind of talking about the more minor characters of this episode, Andy, this is one of the best. This is one of my favorite versions of Andy. Mm. Right, he's kind of got the anger management problem. Right, he almost flips out at Kelly, mm-hmm. but he's still holding back. And then he's also very like kind of earnest and genuine. He's like flirting with Angela. He's not flirting with Angela. Mm-mm. But
quite the opposite. He's floating away.
Yeah, exactly. but.
Floating away versus flirting with. Yeah. But no, I agree. So Andy in general is like in this post anger management. He's been written back into the show, right? I think as we mentioned, he was going to be like on a short sort of stint when he was a correspondent on The Daily Show, short mm-hmm. stint on The Office, but he was written back in, I believe, because of how much of a fan favorite he was. Mm. And basically, he kind of shines here. Yeah, to your point, like he's trying, like he shows this genuine intention to like do better and to not let these things bother him and to not get angry. You know,
yeah,
he throws the rock at that duck.
Yeah,
Mallard, right. Yeah, but in general, he's like, because I recently learned that like you know, trying is more important than winning. You know, and like he
eats the most hot dogs.
Exactly. Yeah,
14. No, 13. 13.
One came up.
He does have the spirit of cooperation to whatever Michael wants to do in a way that, in the early versions of Andy, it's very much like he's kind of brown nosing. He's trying to like you know get close to Michael, push Dwight away, right? Mm-hmm. Become the number two. I'm going to be the number two in this office within a few weeks. How? He's like personality mirroring, name repetition, never breaking off a handshake.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be one step ahead, like a carpenter who's building stairs. But anyway, in Beach Games, Andy's a little softer. Like, he's going along more for, like, the good of the team or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, just in general, he seems like a nicer version of himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's funnier. He has no power over anyone in this episode. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, even in
no friends, no power.
Even in Stamford, he's kind of got some power over Jim, in that he's been there longer than Jim. Mm-hmm.
It's better at Call of Duty.
Yeah, or when he's really divisive, trying to get Dwight fired and things like that. But he comes back from anger management kind of innocent.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy watching this version of Andy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just I mean, some other favorite moments that I just love in this episode, because I was just rewatching it. There's some like fantastic silent comedy when Michael is about to cross the walkway of coals.
Oh yeah, oh,
I think that's such a fantastic scene. Watching it again, like no one speaks. Like it's just reaction shots mm-hmm. from everyone looking really like everyone's expression is kind of like feeling bad for Michael.
And it's in two parts because he freezes up and then they do the countdown and he freezes up again.
Yeah,
and then
they just let it rest. It's great.
He's like, I've already done the challenge.
Yeah,
when I burned my foot on the George Foreman grill.
Yeah, right.
And then like there's a couple
the mind. Has to wrap around the foot.
There's a couple moments in this that there's a lot in The Office where they sort of take a break from reality.
Mm-hmm.
This episode really, really lays it on. Because, I mean, like I mentioned, you get Andy. Like, Andy is dead at the end of this episode. Like, a boat floats by in the middle of the night, which means they all left without Andy.
Right.
He's still in the sumo suit. Michael's not getting that deposit back.
Wow.
A boat comes by.
Hello.
He bought rather than rented.
My name is Andrew Bernard. I'm from a group named Dunder Mifflin. And the light just turns off.
Yeah.
It just goes away.
It's just like a...
Like, so Andy should be dead. And Dwight should be hospitalized and probably need skin grafts for
most
of his body.
Yeah, he's just fine later.
Yeah, like he was laying in coals.
Yeah, his like elbows and knees should but, be you know, severely burned.
We don't see them going home, right?
Right.
The last scene is them also on the bus.
Still on the island.
They're still out there.
That's right. Their bus crashed. And yes. And then they flash sideways into Dunder Mifflin. Yeah. A real lost situation.
This whole thing is happening in Andy's head as he lays
exactly.
in the lake.
Exactly. One of these days, we're going to see it snowing in Dunder Mifflin, and then we're going to see Creed put down a snow globe on the manager's desk. And that's right. Anyway.
He's a polar bear.
But the last scene of the episode is them in the bus singing the Flintstones theme song.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
But like, it seems to be daytime when they're doing that.
It right. seems like on the way there.
This was,
but it definitely connotes that they're going home. So you know,
I've seen people call that out as a plot hole, but I think that we're just exactly we're just traveling back in time for the for the end of the episode.
Well, and like it's not like they're gonna like sing fun songs on the way home after they're like tired and burnt and full of hot dogs.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
They'd all be sleeping.
No,
and it was night. And it was, you know, it is nighttime. Yeah. Actually, wait, no, it is nighttime. So maybe they hadn't left.
Right.
Anyway, that.
How does Andy get back? That's a unanswered question.
Big one. Yeah. Couple good Creed moments here too. I think we see that maybe aside from Dwight, Creed is the most self-reliant person.
Oh, he catches that fish.
Yeah, yeah. Like if I think Creed could survive, Creed might do well in the apocalypse for a long time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We see him. No one told me we're having hot dogs. He's already eating the fish.
Yeah, he's holding the skeleton of a fish.
Yeah. Angela is very evil. We see a real evil side of Angela, letting Andy float away.
Sandwiches?
Putting someone's life in danger.
No, I was saying that before. Now I am saying sabotage.
The moment when Dwight wins the sumo wrestling match.
Everything Andy says until he goes insane.
When Dwight wins the sumo match, and there's just that little shot of Angela like standing up to applaud, and then immediately sitting down and trying to like contain her excitement. It's just a really nice little moment of like them, you know, secretly still, you know, having
Joe's
back.
I mean, she's sabotaging her own team so that he can thrive.
I think. In general, what we see from a lot of these major characters is flashes of who they are in the first three seasons. Mm-hmm. So we see Pam literally sidelined, really kind of chafing at how boring everything is and having to, you know, Michael making these impossible requests of her all the time. We see Jim not taking things seriously, even though there might be an opportunity for him, right? And in part because he knows that he's going to interview for the job in corporate. But it's, again, that same sort of thing where you think that maybe Jim has a moment to, I don't know, kind of show himself in another way, but he's really just joking around.
Yeah.
Dwight is so subservient to Michael. I hope there will be management parables.
Yeah.
Yes. Funtivities. Like, and we see him like, you know, he's like, I will do this for you, Michael. I will stand on these until you give me the job, right? He is so dead set on becoming
job.
Yeah. Right. In the way that like from the coup as well, right? In season three.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, from Andy also sidelined, not there.
Yeah.
Where is he?
Yeah.
Right.
Camera pans.
And he pans out into the lake.
Yeah.
But
you see that meme a lot of like
Camera
crew in season 9 when someone comes at Pam, and then like camera crew in season 3 and it's just Andy floating away.
They help him out. Yeah.
You're filming a boat leaving him in the middle of the night.
Yeah. They must have helped him out at the end.
Let's assume that.
And then, I mean, obviously this culminates with Pam's speech, right? Pam.
Right. Oh, you forgot Mary the Shows Are Boobs.
That's true. Yes.
Also,
well, but I'm talking of characters who are different in the, different moving forward.
Right. You know? Oh, okay.
Right.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Meredith ups the ante with Casual Friday later on.
She gets a PhD.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, so Pam's speech is kind of the culmination.
Right. Let's
she
talk
does
about
the coal
that.
Walk. Mm-hmm. Right. And then she's like, I have something
no
to say,
one.
You know?
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, Michael, I did the coal walk, even you couldn't. Maybe I should have your job boom roasted.
Right, right.
So she doesn't actually say boom roasted, of course.
No.
But has that feel, right?
Right?
And then she does tell Jim that she called off her wedding because of him. And Karen is right there and it's super awkward. She doesn't know how to come down from that. And, you know, she's like, no one came to my art show. She kind of gets to have this cathartic release, this experience in front of everyone in the office, which doesn't happen all the time. Right?
We just had our Pam episode, and I took her side a lot and, you know, was a little more sympathetic to her in that episode. But
where are you going with this?
I have to say that I don't like this speech.
Really?
I have a problem with this speech.
Okay.
It is...
Well, then I got a problem with you.
I think that it is corny and it takes me out of the show. I think that I think that it's too long a monologue without any interruption. It's kind of this like perfect self-reflection that does not happen in real life for anyone ever. She just kind of hits every single thing all at once. They just knock them out, which kind of feels like a cop out to me. Just stand there and say everything you're thinking. You know what I mean?
Like I understand your point from like a storytelling perspective.
Some of these things play out
instead of just, oh, we're just going to pack it all into one monologue where everyone just sits there quietly and
listens.
But
isn't the point that it has been playing out for like three seasons?
Yeah. I mean, if they want it to be explosive, it doesn't feel that explosive. Feels a little low energy for, right? The stakes are kind of low. Everyone just goes,
the coals have burned out.
Okay. Thanks, Pam. Thanks for sharing.
Well, like, Michael's, that's like what Michael says. I mean, and then Michael says, but I'm looking for someone with more of a sales background.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That was incredible, Pam.
Yeah. Yeah, right. There you go. That's how I feel. Like even I mean, she's like saying all these things, and then she says, "Oh, I feel really good right now." It's just like, you know, it feels like a telling rather than showing moment to me. What do you think? You want to come to its defense?
Of course. This is how these things go.
Just my quick 2 cents. Like it's one of the most cathartic moments on the show, I think, for me, at least watching it, outside of, you know, when Michael leaves. There's just a few moments where they take all this energy that's been bundling up, all this tension, and then kind of release it in this big punch. And I think you need to do that every now and then. Like, I think Pam earns that over 3 seasons. That, I mean, she even mentions it. She's like, none of you came to my art show. A lot of you pretend I don't exist. Jim, we're not friends anymore. And, like, you know, you remember, like, at the end of this is, you know, right near the end of the season. And it kind of sets up the next, like, 2 seasons almost, like, this speech.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it felt really earned by Pam. And I think the story actually really needed it. And Pam really emerges as the main character, I think, in that moment.
I mean, I agree with Alex. I disagree with your reading on it. I can't just say I agree. I have to be clear.
There's a lot.
I think that what goes on with Pam simmers through the 3rd season a lot. In the first 2 seasons, Pam is often played in relation to Jim as someone who maybe has a little more to offer in terms of her art background and in terms of her observations and like how funny she is, right? And that gets kind of taken away in season 3, where because Jim is engaging so much with Karen, like Pam doesn't get these things. And when Pam does try to go to Jim for these moments, Jim is like, you know, I really shouldn't be doing this anymore, you know? And then when it comes to her art, like we literally see her put out this art and no one cares about it except for Michael, Twinkie in Pocket, you know? And it's this sort of simmers throughout the season in that like when she and Karen are becoming friends or whatever, you know, like, and then like it's weird for Jim and, you know, Jim has to deal with the fact, like, you know, Phyllis tells Karen that he had a big thing for Pam. Like, this is a kind of simmers, Phyllis. Right?
Damn it, Phyllis.
I'm sorry.
Damn it, Phyllis.
And basically, like, this stuff is kind of burbling through the whole season, right? This is kind of it's an undercurrent. And then in the Beach Day episode, right, Michael is so oppressive is the wrong word, but he literally takes her out of everything that's fun in the day. He makes her sit on the sideline. He makes her take notes. Like he makes her do all these things. And he's like, gets angry at her. And he's like, oh, Pam. He's like, oh, I can't stand mad at you. You're too cute. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And then at the end, like there are these moments, you know, everybody's supposed to like, everybody's being challenged, right? Challenged to step up. Someone step up. Mr. Outside Howard, hire. I need Mr. Outside Howard. That's who comes in. Mr. Inside Howard, Ryan Howard. Yeah. But, you know, so in that moment, Pam does kind of.
Or her. Right,
yeah.
So Michael's most sexist episode, probably.
But anyway, so I think it makes sense. I understand where you're coming from, where it's a lot of talking time from Pam, right? And a lot of the characters don't react. We see
a little bit
of reaction in the next episode, The Job.
Right.
Where we see the characters back in the office.
Kind of apologizes to Karen, but not really.
It's like a half apology.
Pam is kind of a bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, well, you hear Stanley say, like, I've never heard you talk that much.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right,
like,
right.
I think they all have their reactions to it, but they don't really know what to do in the moment, you know?
If everyone is shocked into silence, I don't know if it's that Jenna Fisher's coming out a little too low energy to convince me that she's shocked people into silence. Do you know what I mean? She's really, I mean, the speech kind of slows down and gets a little quiet after a while. And I'm just kind of like, everyone's just going to let her roll with that.
There's a lot for people to process.
I could see Karen jump, be like, whoa, hey, like, you know, or there's something about it that doesn't feel natural to me.
See, I think that is natural, though.
Yeah, I agree.
Because if you're doing that in front of a group, like, people are not going to, people are going to be like, I want to see where she goes, or just like, I need to take this in. The thing about The Office is we see the things that Pam's talking about play out so many different times. Everyone talks about it in their talking heads in the conference room when it's just them by themselves.
Right.
And they just start pontificating on their place and whatever is going on.
We're very used to hearing characters deliver monologues like this.
Yeah, that's exactly my point.
Conditioned, yeah.
But in front of a group, like the public speaking, people are not comfortable with that.
Right.
Like, that's really uncomfortable. And so I don't think anyone's used to it. I don't think Pam is used to it. And I certainly don't think like anyone else is going to like say anything during it except Michael. And he kind of does, at least when she's done.
I think Pam starts to speak. And then as she's delivered one thing, she kind of is like, well, now that I'm in it, I'm going to deliver this. And now that I'm in it, I'm going to talk about this. And then that builds up to Jim, you know, this sort of moment where she like has. And I get you can't call it an outburst because I agree that her character she's subdued. She doesn't yell or anything, but like,
and she owns up like this is unusual for her, like this is different, like I think it's supposed to be kind of jarring. It is totally different, and that's the point, is she's like fueled up on adrenaline from doing the coal walk, and she's like, you know what, I've had enough, today sucked for me.
There's something that's so low stakes about it, that she does the coal walk without anyone watching, that she walks over and launches into a speech where no one interrupts and says all the things that we want her to say. Right, I'm just saying that it doesn't, like, I would have liked to see,
but that's
conflict.
After like two seasons of not hearing what she wants to say.
Yeah, you know, like, we talk about that. I don't like certain times in The Office when it seems like
out of character moments,
right? Or that I like the bleak reality that we live in most of The Office, where people don't really get what they want and settle for it. But this just feels she's just saying everything you want her to say, we just need to get to the next stage with Pam and Jim. We just need to get Karen out of here. Get to the next stage with Pam and Jim. So how about one big old monologue where, you know what I'm saying, if that makes sense. But it feels like.
But I mean, that's storytelling. It's rising action to a climax and then falling action. It's not a series of mountains. You know what I'm saying? Like in the chart of that dynamic, it has to go up and then come down. Like it's not, I guess, what would your alternative be if not for this? This series of tension that builds to this moment. And I mean, like, you can, you know, if it takes you out of the show, it takes you out of the show, right? If you don't like it, you don't like it. We're not going to convince you to like it.
Right.
But, like, what would your alternative be, I suppose?
I might have actually liked to see this dissolve, like, this, her
fight.
Speech
turn, fight.
Yeah, devolve into some sort of, like, chaotic argument that has some repercussions. In the following episodes, and maybe that's why Karen leaves. Instead, they make it that Jim leaves Karen in New York, right? Mm-hmm. She just kind of like, oh, that was annoying when Pam did that, but that doesn't have any actual impact, really.
There is a moment where Karen is like...
Except that maybe she convinced Jim.
Well, there's a moment where Karen is like, she's like, if you get the job, I'll move here with you. If
right,
I get the job, you're going to move here with me. And he's I don't know. And and she's like come on, there's one too many people in Scranton. Like she knows that. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I think if it hadn't felt earned at all, I would agree with you that it comes out of nowhere. But to me, it feels so earned. And like Edwin was saying, like within the structure of like storytelling, like you got to deliver the goods at some point. You need to turn the page. And at some point, yes, you need to get from point A to point B. And I thought it was a super effective way of doing it.
Yeah.
And like it added another dimension to Pam's character.
It's the equivalent of Jim telling Pam that he loves her in season 2. It's right at the end of the season. And then you got to do something with
like,
it, you know?
Yeah. Like Jim has a Jim walks into the parking lot and is like, here's everything I feel about you, Pam. And why is that any different?
Because she's still with Roy. Like, there's the stakes are higher, and right?
But Jim's with Karen at this point.
I honestly think that if Pam went to Jim one-on-one instead of doing the speech in front of everyone, that would have felt a little scarier to me. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Now he has to respond, mm-hmm. right? She just kind of, like, addresses the crowd. He can just sit there and think about it and mm-hmm. say something later, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if she went up to him and was like, right now, tell me, like, is it never going to happen between us? Because I, you know what I'm saying? Like, that would have felt more dangerous than what she did somehow.
I agree, but Pam's not dangerous in the cold walk? But Pam's not a dangerous character. Like,
well, but if you're going to watch...
Andy's not much of a risk.
So she's the hero, right, in this scenario, right? Sure. So if you watch your hero struggle, and then the climax is her having a moment of clarity alone where she walks across the coals, and then delivers a heartfelt speech to her villain, let's say, which is Karen or everyone else oppressing
her. So that's the difference, is that it's everyone. It's not it's not just, she doesn't have to look Jim in the eye. She has to look everyone in the eye.
Right.
And Michael mm-hmm. as well.
Right,
like
right.
Speaking up to Michael, I think, is almost as important. Like
she has an agenda. She has there's a few items. She's like, I need to check all these off right now.
And I think to your point, this idea that it kind of spills out of her.
Right.
She's like, she says that, and she's like, and you're with someone else, and that's fine. I don't know. Like, you know, she like doesn't know how to stick the landing.
Well,
like,
I mean, and then she walks away, and I think that the general reaction from the crowd is yeesh, you know, it's just it's not really, you know, I don't know it, anyways, that's, I think that we're meant to see this as a big win for Pam, and she's stood up to the, you know, the people's perception of her in the office or something like that, but it falls flat for me.
No.
Okay.
This is why we do this show.
We can agree to disagree. I still think that's a great moment for Pam.
Yeah.
It's a signature moment.
Yeah.
I love it.
I think that there's other people out there who might agree with me. So please, if you do
please.
Yeah, Shawnee needs to back up. Yeah.
That's a good discussion though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm glad that you feel that way, because I've never really talked about that moment.
Nearly a cringe moment.
Let me ask you this. Have you always felt this way about that moment?
I think so. Yeah. Hmm. I think so.
Number two, who hurt you?
Well, yeah. That's good.
We had these other sort of like little questions to kind of help set up more discussion. I haven't even looked at it. Yeah, I don't know if we can really go there. Like, listen to this.
Yeah. When will the baby be born?
Listen to this question. How does the format of games change the episode? How does this compare to other episodes with games? Office Olympics, murder, paper, airplanes. Doesn't make a lot of sense to talk about that now.
Yeah, we've already
right?
We've already hit the climax of our episode here. Hmm. We don't even need to go into the games.
I love the joke when Michael talks about Bob Hope, and Kelly says, who's Bob Hope? And he's like, oh, God, he's a comedian. She's like, oh, like Amanda Bynes. He's like, who's that? She's like, from She's All That. Oh, I love her.
What
a Girl Wants. Sorry.
I think they're both in Man of Bynes movies,
that's
right?
That's such a sweet, that's such a great moment between Michael and Kelly.
Yeah. Timing of a Bynes. Yeah.
A good
Hope.
Foreshadowing for Michael and Kelly's moments of
I'm going to pretend to fire you, and mm-hmm.
You have no idea how much trouble I have getting people to come over to my place.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how much homemade guacamole I've had to eat over the years? I have no idea why I make it in such large quantities.
Yeah, what an episode, though.
Yeah,
I mean, I from top to bottom, it's fun to. I'm trying to think. Is there an episode before this where they are out of the office for the whole episode?
Booze Cruise.
Oh, yeah. Booze Goose.
But even then, they're not really at it for the whole episode. It's only part of it.
Right.
I love that they, when they're on the bus and they're singing songs, like that's a really fun. Like, we talk about this notion of bottle episodes, but they're really like these bottle moments when they're all on the bus, right? Mm-hmm. And it kind of comes back a few times, like in Gettysburg in season 8 when they're on the bus and they're trying to watch, and Daryl's got movies that they're playing for everyone.
Right. And, wait, Limitless?
Yeah, Limitless. And then on the way back is Lincoln Lawyer.
Right.
And then...
And the work bus. There's some a lot of bus
And then
stuff.
Work bus, exactly, mm-hmm. when, you know, Dwight gets the work bus to, you know, while they're getting it tested for radiation.
Yeah, right.
So there are these moments where they all have to travel together like that. And whenever you can put people in a little space like that, funny things happen. Mm-hmm. And I love when like they all sing together. It's, and like everyone's just kind moment. Of singing, like they're like staring off into the distance. Yeah.
Kenny Rogers song.
Away.
And yeah. Everyone like, seems to know the words.
Out of valley on the table.
Yeah. It's good. You get Michael takes the high harmony. Mm-hmm. Really consistent.
Or on the Flintstones one.
Wilma. They're like, you know, is a Modern Family. And Michael's like, da 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 da.
Yeah. Two things from that I thought was like, one, that's another kind of like frozen in time moment. Like everyone would be on their phones. They wouldn't be singing today if they're just sitting on the bus. And two, I was looking at the seating arrangements. I don't know how much thought was put into that because I'm like, no, I do not think Angela would sit next to Kevin.
Hmm.
I think she would want a break. She would sit next to Dwight, probably. Or no, maybe they wouldn't. They'd want to hide it.
If Michael organizes some sort of group photo or group hug, stand next to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, it's like Andy and Kelly. There's just some weird seating arrangements. Yeah. It's like everyone would have their own seat. That's always how it goes, you know, when you're sitting there. But hey, they got to get everyone in one shot.
You know, I think that there's something about those bus scenes that feel like you're watching the cast of the show rather than the characters.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, all of them singing together. There's even a moment, too, I think, where Michael says, does the Wilma at the end of the Flintstones, and people turn around they're kind of nice.
Yeah.
I don't know this for a fact, but that feels like genuine. I think that's people actually breaking and being like, oh, nice.
That happens. If you watch some of the commentary, some of the deleted scenes, like that stuff, bloopers, that stuff makes it in.
Ed Helms seems genuinely surprised by Michael's Wilma, which maybe he
and
wasn't.
Ryan, the way
maybe
Ryan's
it wasn't
smiling
a plan for him to do. Yeah.
My favorite moment that I know for sure is a blooper that made it in is in the it's in season 7, the first episode, the corporate punishment one.
Yeah.
I committed corporate punishment. Right? but when Michael spanks Luke and then he's like joking about spanking Andy, and then Dwight gets up and like also starts spanking Andy, like that's a blooper, and everyone just starts to laugh because like it's weird,
like, super weird.
It's such a Dwight energy moment. Yeah. Where, like, you can see the Dwight energy.
Yeah. Yeah. So in character,
he wants a rough house.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's sort of like I wouldn't be surprised if they had the whole cast there and they were just rolling and they were like, what songs do you guys all know? Like,
yeah.
And they just did like four or five songs. Like
someone just started
singing. And they just started having fun.
Yeah.
And the energy on like a bus like that is like, do you remember taking field trips?
Oh yeah.
You know, in
school. Oh yeah. It's
just a different energy. Everyone's acting a little different.
Right.
It's just
right.
like, ooh, we're getting away with something.
No one knows yet that Beach Day is going to be.
Yeah. And so,
you know, it's an underrated factor of that. You're not wearing a seatbelt. You can jump up and move around.
Exactly.
Right. People around.
Great episode.
This is fun talking about it. We didn't even get to the games, but you know, hey, which of the beach games would you do best at?
Firewall.
That we see.
I feel good about the sumo.
Yeah?
I got a good
center
of gravity. Yeah.
center of gravity.
Center of balance.
Egg walk. I mean, it's like process of elimination. It's like not the firewalk,
not the hot dogs. No,
I think I could do all right at the hot dogs.
I wouldn't eat one hot dog.
If I was hungry enough, I think I could.
I think I could do the egg on the spoon walk.
Sounds like we got a pretty balanced team. Sumo, eggs. I'll take the hot dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh man, we're gonna have to do this on our next retreat.
Team, shoot, MSPC.
Yeah. One thing. Just some sort of nitpicks. The way Jim chants Voldemort bugs the hell out of me. Just bugs.
Oh, really?
Because he goes like Voldemort, Voldemort,
Voldemort,
Voldemort. Like he changes the cadence, and it just sticks in my head, and I hate it.
Hitting the wrong syllable.
Rewatching that, I thought it was so funny that like we kind of gloss over this, but it's like, it's one thing for Dwight to be like a super nerd who loves Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings and Battlestar Galactica. It's another thing for him to like Harry Potter so much that he's actually afraid of Voldemort.
Yeah,
he
must be
named. That's so funny. Like, you don't know what you're doing, Jim. Okay.
And it would have been more character for him to say the Dark Lord, but go ahead.
You were talking about what our team name would be for beach games, right? Mm. I can run you through a list of office trivia names that I came up with this
one. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, let's hear it.
So, all right. Please.
This is a note I have on my phone.
Wait a minute. I have a drop just for this.
We did office trivia at a bar one night.
Right.
We got second.
Yeah.
which is...
embarrassing.
Yeah. but I'm ready when you are. You want me to go?
Yeah, wait. Yes. Where did it go?
That means conference room, 5 minutes. No, 5 seconds.
Okay, so a list of office trivia team names that I came up with this one time.
Yes.
Diversity Tomorrow. Kevin and the Zits.
Diversity Tomorrow.
Because today is almost over.
Right.
Kevin and the Zits / Edwin and the Zits.
Yes, that's
love
good.
That.
Yeah.
Fundle Bundle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Baylor, I hardly know her.
That's good.
Slumdunder Mifflinair.
Yep.
The Lone Ranger and Tonto and Bonto.
That's a good one.
Scholastic Speakers of Pennsylvania. Disaster Kits Limited.
Uh-huh.
One of the five families.
That's good.
Banana Slings.
Yep.
Jim's Whole Spider in the Mitt incident.
That's such a good one.
We don't want to repeat what happened last year with Jim's Whole Spider in the Mitt incident.
Could have died.
Annie Shelto.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Let's Get Ethical.
Mm-hmm.
Yoruba.
Yoruba.
Yeah. You old bastard.
That's good.
Letting anyone in here, you old bastard.
You gay right. Bastard.
Senior Lodenstein.
That's good.
Why do
they call him Rapido?
Yeah. The Little Kid Lovers.
That's a good one.
Stumpany, which is stupid company.
Right. Yeah.
Sadakoi Steel.
Nice, where Charles Minor
comes
from.
Flonkerton.
Mm.
Yeah.
Alfredo's Pizza Cafe.
Which is the good one.
Coconut Penis.
The
which
soda
is the flavor
the
of that energy drink.
When the warehouse wins the lottery.
Yeah.
Wow.
What?
I don't like the coconut.
Yeah.
Why did they add coconut? Yeah. And then the Einsteins. That's the last one.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Beautiful.
Those are good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Shall we move on?
Yes.
Trivia?
No.
We're going to do another conference.
Oh, sorry.
No, that was our 5 second.
Yes. An extended conference.
So here we go.
Okay, everybody, listen up. If you are not in that conference room in 2 minutes, I am going to kill you.
Okay.
I found a lot more conference room drafts, by the way.
Speaking on a spin on a familiar theme, we're going to watch a video for this or a trailer for the show coming up called The Morning Show. Have you guys seen this?
Uh-uh.
So it's a show that does star Steve Carell, Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon. It's coming out on Apple TV Plus.
Uh-huh.
But I want you to watch it really quickly we don't have to watch maybe the whole trailer, but there's a pretty funny Office callback that I want to show you guys. So ideally if we could watch it together.
All right.
8 seconds to you. Cue her.
Good morning. I'm bringing you some sad and upsetting news. And while I don't know the details of the allegations...
She's throwing me under the bus.
Mitch Kessler, my co-host and partner of 15 years, was fired today.
You!
We are facing the biggest crisis in our history.
My life just ended for no good reason.
We're in the middle of an epic rebirth. Her sell-by date expired years ago. I want you to start grooming some new people.
I don't fit the mold.
What mold is that?
Any mold, really? Your show sucks.
Thank you.
It's
Thank
barely
you.
News.
I want wardrobe tests, screen tests, makeup tests. We need a contract. Where's legal?
Ready? I'm ready. Most people want to trust that the person that is telling them about the world is an honest person.
Wow.
So this goes on for a little
two
while.
Two callbacks,
longer.
Yeah.
But two wow. big callbacks to The Office
what?
In this trailer.
Breaking the plasma TV.
Number one is breaking the plasma TV. Steve Carell breaking a plasma TV.
Which has been pulled out from the wall a little
bit. Which is a position above
the wall
fireplace.
From space.
It really looks exactly
you
like.
You ruined my life.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, babe. Good luck paying me back on your $0 a year salary, babe. So breaking the TV, of course. And then...
Yeah.
The second one is Goodbye Stranger from Supertramp.
Unbelievable. Right? That
callback
is...
to the season 4 finale, Goodbye Toby, where he sings
that's
that
hysterical.
Song. Yeah.
Feel no pain.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so
amazing.
It's like the news are out. This trailer came out for this new show that's supposed to like kind of headline the release of Apple TV Plus.
Uh-huh. Right.
And it's like most people are talking about The Office.
Right, right.
Goodbye Stranger again. Yeah.
That is too good.
I mean, what do you think Steve Carell was like? You're going to smash a plasma TV. And he's guys, I'm never going to get away from
Have you
Michael
guys
Scott.
Seen The Office?
Yeah. And he's not. I mean,
that's amazing.
I don't know.
He's like, this TV stand looks familiar. It's either pine or Nordic cherry.
It's pine.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Thank you for that. That was great.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you so much, sir. Yes, let's do some trivia.
Let's do some trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
Okay, so I've got a few trivia questions for you this week. This is kind of a unique spin on trivia. So there's this...
always bringing the spin to the
trivia.
Right.
That's right. That's what we do. So how about with a little more zing and a little more pep? Okay, so basically this is a list of characters or cast members from The Office revealing their favorite episodes. So I'm going to read you their quote about the episode, and I'm going to challenge you guys to figure out the episode and the cast members that it.
Wow. Love it.
Okay. Wow, this is fun.
This is tasty.
Okay, so the quote is this. It turns into a Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. I enjoyed acting in it. It was a very difficult episode to get through because we were laughing constantly.
That's definitely Dinner Party.
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Was that Jan?
I think it's. I want to say it's. Hardens? I want to say it's Jenna Fisher.
No. Do you want me to tell you, or do you want to keep guessing?
Or is it? I don't think
it's
Steve Carell.
I'm just
going to
start guessing everyone who's at the dinner party. Mm-hmm. But
take one more. Each of you guys take one more guess, and I'll tell you who it is.
Okay, John Krasinski.
Not correct. or incorrect. Excuse me.
Angela.
It's Steve Carell.
Ah, it is. Okay.
Personal favorite of Steve Carell.
Yeah.
Okay, this next quote is, this one's going to be kind of easy, but it's such a classic in my mind. Dwight getting in a car accident, concussion, throwing up on his car, and him actually developing a friendship with Pam because his personality changed from the concussion. Completely realistic, grounded. I love that one.
It's the injury.
That's correct.
And it must be, I'm guessing Rainn Wilson.
I'll guess Jenna Fisher because
it's funny.
Guess Rain.
Both of them are listed. So Rainn Wilson gave that quote. That's correct.
Yes.
Jenna Fisher had the same thing. She says, I was going to say the injury as well. I really love the episodes where Pam and Dwight become friends.
We both get a point.
Gold star. I get a gold star and you have got a point. We'll see if there's a conversion chart later.
Thumbs up.
Okay. Well, again, this is gonna give some of this away, but like I have so many favorite moments and memories, but if I had to settle on one, I would say this episode. It was one of the most important moments for me as an actor. It took this relationship on the show to another level. We ratcheted up a story with a high wire act. I felt like I was now responsible for something that was really important to the fans, and I got excited by that.
Ooh.
I'm going to say John Krasinski, Casino Night.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nailed it. Jeez.
I had to make some live edits.
Yeah. It was well done. That was very well done.
Yeah. Yeah.
He calls them the Jam fans. Peanut Butter and Jelly. Pam Beasley and Jim.
Oh, my God. That's funny.
Okay. So, let's see. There's a million favorites. I watched the scene of Steve smooching Oscar in Gay Witch Hunt, and the prospect of joining the show was so excited for me.
Okay, wait a minute.
Andy Bernard?
So it's somebody after the
Witch
Hunt.
A.K.A. Ed Helms.
No, because that's his first episode.
Oh.
Right? Wait, read the quote again.
Oh, you're right.
There's a million favorites.
No, he's not. He's not in... Well, yeah. He's in.
There's a million favorites.
Okay.
There's a million favorites. I watched the scene of Steve smooching Oscar in Gay Witch Hunt, and the prospect of joining the show was so exciting to me.
So that's beginning of season 3.
So that's actually... Ed Helms is in that episode, so I don't think...
So you guys should each just guess a cast member.
Okay, I'll say... frick.
I'll say Rashida Jones.
I'll say Ed Helms.
Ed Helms is correct.
Okay, it was Ed Helms.
There's a million favorites.
So I guess he must mean that he wasn't there to see that get filmed. He wasn't there for that scene.
The tag in this little article is he mixed up his timeline a little here, as he had already joined the show by the time this episode
was
being
made.
But the sentiment still holds up. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I won that because I did say it first, but whatever. It's cool.
I didn't want to just give it away. I wanted to give you guys time to think and reconsider. Yeah.
Nice. Do you have any more?
No, that's it. I'm sorry.
Oh, yes, no, that's great. Yes. That was a great spin on trivia. I loved that.
Now I want to guess.
Zing and Pep. Pep and Zing.
Like, what's Creed's favorite? Creed Bratton's favorite episode was?
Halloween. He doesn't get fired.
Yeah, it's a good call.
Oh, you guys, thank you so much for listening. Please, write to us. We'd love to hear your comments, your questions. We'd love to hear your opinions on some of the things we discussed today.
Like Pam's speech, for example.
What is your stance on Pam's speech?
What beach game would you rock?
What beach game would you rock? Hit us up. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter, at Michael Scott Pod. We're on Instagram, at Michael Scott Podcast Company. And we have a phone number that you can call, 503-694-9314. Call us and leave us a message. We love to play them on the show.
Or you can send us an email. mspodcastcompany@gmail.com if you want to do the old-fashioned way.
There's almost
talk to
any
us in person if you know us. Put a message in a bottle. We'll find it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Our home addresses are... Thank you so much for listening, and join us next week when we talk about The Office again.
Reunion?
Little
tease?
Little tease.
Bippity poppy, give me this up.
Yes, sir.
Nice.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.